Yeah, so if you find very difficult to focus, usually there are two main reasons. One is that our mind is too restless. One is that we feel like falling asleep. Yes, that's the first one.
Yeah.
So if you find that your mind is too active, what you can do, a common method that we use is to count our breathing. So it's just to add a bit more focus, force ourselves to focus a bit more. So when you breathe out, when you exhale, in your mind count 10, second time when you exhale, 9, third time exhale, 8. So you actually put extra effort and having a number tied to your breathing. And that will actually take away the distraction, because the numbers will then substitute the distraction and helps you to focus on your breathing a bit more. So, but still remember to observe your breathing, not just counting number. The number is just extra to add on. But once you find that you're pretty calm and you're pretty focused, the counting become a disturbance, let go the counting. Okay, so that's this counting of the breathing can be used to, if you're very drowsy, same thing, just sort of alert ourselves, have a number tying to it. It helps to overcome drowsiness as well as restlessness. Okay, alright, so today's topic is about suffering. Concept of suffering. Alright, so what is suffering? What is your understanding on suffering? Unsatisfaction. Okay, just feel that everything is against my will. Upset. Not satisfied. Okay, so that is a kind of frustration. That's a kind of suffering. What else? Do you think life is suffering? Well, Buddhism always said life is suffering. A lot of people tend to say, why Buddhism is so pessimistic, so negative? These days, especially this day, we talk about positive words, right? We need to use a positive way of saying. And Buddhism sounds like life is suffering. Everything is impermanent. Oh, it's so pessimistic. So, what is suffering? So, frustration, dissatisfaction,
anxiety.
Yes, anxiety. It's a kind of suffering. What else?
Physical suffering
when you're sick, when you age. Yes. So there's physical suffering.
You cannot get what you want.
You can't get what you want. Yes. Alright, so when the Buddha start teaching, he start to say that there is suffering. So when the Buddha teach, well, when the Buddha, before he became a Buddha, he was a prince, and he had very comfortable life in the palace, but he do feel that no matter how high is your status in the society, how powerful you are, how rich you are, somehow, our mind is actually not at rest. We all, so when he was young, he visited the country, he saw sickness, aging, sickness, death. And he just realized that regardless of what status you are in, what kind of nationality you are, what color skin you have, all this come to us. It's just like the virus. As we say, the virus has not go. No boundary. It doesn't recognize your color scheme, the color of your skin, right? It is we who say, okay, virus, we had border protection, but the border protection cannot impose travel ban to the virus. See? So same thing. When Prince Siddhartha was young, he realized that aging, sickness and death, it happens to everyone, regardless of what status you are in. And this is something that is not very nice. We all do not like it. But why? why it happens, right? And also he saw that how when people are young and healthy, or people when they are fit, then they start to fight with one another to get more of what they want. And then there are all this fighting going around. If you look at our world today, same thing. You find that when the world, when there's no disaster, nothing, then will be all this human-made problem. And people start to attack one another, having war, fighting with one another. And then suddenly come with a disaster, then temporarily they put aside the conflicts and the fighting, and then go and tackle the natural disaster. Once the natural disaster is gone, people start to get bored and they start to fight again for their benefit. It never ends. And is that the meaning of life? That we're born in this world, when we are quite okay, we are happy, we start to fight. And then if disaster comes, we put aside temporarily, go and tackle the problem, but that is also a suffering. And when it goes away, we come and then we start to age and sick and die. Is it how we should live our life? Is it better meaning than this? Has our life got better meaning than this? Right? So that's why Prince Siddhartha left the palace in search of the truth. So when he realized the truth that he realized is actually to answer this question. So when he went to the deer park to teach the first time, so he was very skillful. He tried to put across his teaching in a very practical way. So what he had realized was actually very profound. But he tried to put it across in a practical way so that ordinary person can understand. So first, he go to the deer park, he talked to these five soldiers or five ascetics who accompanied him during his practice of asceticism. So he went to them, he said, do you think that there are dissatisfaction in life? In fact, why do they want to practice? The reason why they want to practice is because they feel that there's dissatisfaction. Because if we are all very, very happy, and we feel like life is perfect, I don't think you want to sit here and listen to me. Boring, right? The reason why we want to search for something is that we actually feel that there are some inadequacy in our life, regardless of what religion you come from. If you think about all religion that we have in the world, even the native tribes, why do they worship the sun, the moon, the wind, the water, the river, the ocean? Because they feel that there are things that's beyond their control. And when things are beyond our control, it's just like this COVID-19, it's a bit beyond our control, and we do not understand their characteristic. So that's why we have fear, because we are so worried that we do not know how aggressive they will be and how serious it will become. So this sense of unknown is a kind of suffering as well. And so if you think about native tribes, so you might say, oh, they're superstitious, why are they worshipping the tree? Why are they worshipping the river? Why must they have some rituals before they cross the river or the ocean? It's because there's this unknown. And so people start to think there must be some spirit in the water, in the river or in the ocean. So we need to make sure that we please them and say nice words to them so that when we cross the river, they don't get upset and overturn our boat. That's how people think. And that's why they come out with all kinds of rituals and ways and thought maybe that will help. And so that's how religion comes about. If you think about native religion or civilized religion, deep in our heart is life is not perfect. And that's why we start to think about how can we be happier. And that's a common goal of humankind. How can we have a happier life? Listen, if you think of any religion, whether it's the Aborigines, whether it's Christianity, Muslim, Buddhism, whatever it is, we are talking about how to have a happier life. And so, in other words, everyone agree that life is suffering. But it's just that we don't like the negative words. But the Buddha used the word life is suffering. So the reason why Buddha said life is suffering is not because there's no happiness. It's just that we tend to, we all like happiness. We tend to attach to happiness a lot and try to say, I didn't see the suffering. We try to just cover up and say, no, it's not suffering. Oh, it's there, and this is endurable. This is okay. We still have a lot of happiness. So, but the Buddha wants us to confront the frustration that we have, the dissatisfaction that we have, and find out why are they as such. So that's why when he went to the deer park and teach the five soldiers, first he says, there are sufferings in life. Do you agree? Because if the audience say, we don't agree that they are suffering, my life is perfect, I'm very happy with what I have now, then we cannot go on with this topic anymore. So he was very skillful. So he first says that they are suffering. So some may be like, oh, he said, yeah, sometimes there are dissatisfactions, sometimes there are happiness. And so, and some say, I don't think so, I'm quite happy. So then the Buddha analyzed, no matter how happy you are, you find that your happy state doesn't last forever. So when you're in a happy state, we have a sense of anxiety and worries. How long can this happy state last? If you have a girlfriend or boyfriend or even husband and wife, how long can our relationship last? You know, when you are in love, very happy, but sometimes deep in your heart, will he or she change? There's this sense of uncertainty. That sense of uncertainty is actually a kind of suffering. And also sense of insecurity. This day, we try to buy insurance, we try to install a lot of camera, we try to install of a security gate. Why? To secure ourselves. We lock ourselves into a secure room with a lot of camera looking at us. A security gate. Just in case the robbers come. That sense of insecurity is a kind of suffering. I met with one devotee, she lived by herself. And every night she on the alarm, even the alarm in her own bedroom. So in the middle of the night, if she wants to go to the toilet, she needs to try to sneak and just make sure it doesn't make an alarm. You know, I just wonder whether she can sleep soundly. But that's how she sleeps every day. And that's why every day you look at her, she's not like fully, she didn't have a good sleep. It's full of anxiety. And this is kind of suffering as well. Sense of insecurity, uncertainty. And so the Buddha tried to analyze to us the type of suffering that we have. So a common, sometimes we say there are three types of suffering. One is that the suffering that's right in front of us. Say for example, we have a fall, or that's physical suffering, or you receive a bad result and you feel very sad, right? There are suffering, which is suffering right in front of us. That's suffering. And then the second type of suffering is suffering that arises due to the change from a good state when you change to a bad state. That, especially if you don't expect that to happen, that is great suffering. And that's why a lot of time we don't expect some of our beloved ones to leave us. And that's why a lot of time people just feel that stressful, and at the end they fall into depression. And the other suffering are suffering that arise due to impermanence. That is subtle, sometimes we don't realize, but it is a kind of suffering, just like what we said just then. Sense of uncertainty, sense of insecurity, the anxiety that's going on in our cell because of a lot of unknown, and fear, and that's go on every moment. Like now, everyone has this a bit of this worry in themselves that this virus is like spreading, and you just do not know how it spread, and when it come to us, and it's getting closer and closer. And so that a bit of fear in yourself, you go and catch a bus, you go and catch a train, there's a lot of crowd, people pushing. You start to feel a bit scared because we try to avoid touching, right? We try to avoid contact. And if you're on the train, someone just happened to sneeze, you go back and you start to think, I think I feel uncomfortable now. And that's kind of suffering. Right, so three types of suffering. One is the suffering that's right in front of us due to unfavorable circumstances. Second, suffering that happens due to deterioration from happiness to unhappiness, and then suffering due to the impermanence. So it creates sense of uncertainty and insecurity. And also, the Buddha tried to exemplify suffering in different ways. They explain suffering. There are eight types of suffering. So the eight types of suffering, which are common, one is birth. We thought, why birth? Happy birthday. That should be very happy, right? But at the time when you are born, we're not sure whether you're happy or not, but all babies cry. And I think it's quite a big change from a very small environment, and then squeeze through and suddenly to become under a different kind of pressure. It is quite don't think it's comfortable. And that's why you find that baby cry a lot on the aeroplane, because the pressure is different. The eardrums feel uncomfortable. And so they cry a lot on the plane. But people don't tolerate them, and so they want to ban babies on the plane, which is... So, when you are considerate, then you start to think, we have been a baby before. So we should learn to understand, right? And because no one likes to cry. The moms don't want the baby to cry as well. It's not intentional. Yeah, but sometimes people just feel like, no, I need to sleep. I don't want babies on the... That's a bit selfish, isn't it? We all gone through baby stage, and we just need to feel sorry for the mom, right? So, yes. So birth, the baby, we ourselves, we do not know because we can't remember. But if you look at the mom go through a lot of suffering. Well, even before the birth, the mom go through a lot of suffering. And that's why we should always be appreciative to our parents. And so in Buddhism, we always say that our birthday is the day that our mom, it's a disaster day for our mom. The day that our mom suffered. So the best way to repay our mom's kindness is on our birthday, try to do something good for your mom. Maybe cook a dish for your mom, rather than say ask your mom to cook for you because it's your birthday. Make a cake for your mom, right? And celebrate together. And that will make your mom happy. And that's very important, because you think about the day, that day was like some, it's like life and death. It can be very, very dangerous. So it is very important for us to have sense of gratitude to our parents. And so birth is, so from what we see, but because a new life is born, everyone tends to be very happy. So that happiness sort of overcome the physical sufferings that the mom or the baby had. And everyone look forward to happiness. So that's why it goes away quickly. And everyone's sort of more ready to accept those kind of pain and suffering. And that's why it goes away quickly. But so that's what we can see. It's actually, in actual fact, it is not as comfortable as as it is. And from the other perspective, if we are practicing the Buddha's teaching, and we hope to be free from the cycle of life and death. And when you're born, that means we have failed. We are born again. And we need to go around the cycle of life and death again. So it is not, it is like being repeated. So you have to repeat the course again. So which is not a very happy thing, right? So that's why birth is a kind of suffering. Sickness, of course, is a suffering. I think sickness, everyone knows about. Sickness is not comfortable. It comes, it goes. Sometimes it's serious, it can be worrying, and then sometimes it goes, but it comes again. So sickness is a kind of suffering. Aging, probably you all haven't experienced aging, and that's why you probably don't understand that much about the pain of aging. But if you have grandparents, if you look at them, they need to rely on you to help them to carry heavy stuff. They can't run. There are a lot of things that they can't eat. And then when they get to old age, you find that everyone, nearly all old age elders, have high blood pressure, heart problem, diabetes problem. It's all this common high cholesterol. And so they have to be very, very careful with what they're eating. At the end, no teeth, they can't chew. It's very hard. And at the end, and then you find that hearing, when you speak, you can't hear, and they have to speak very loud, and everyone said, you're too loud. And then they start to feel very embarrassed. At the end, they say, oh. Because when people say something, they can't hear, and people get tired, people don't want to talk to them. And when they speak, people say they're too loud. And they start to feel hurt. You know, sometimes they feel hurt. We have to be very careful as well. So that's why aging, there are mental as well as physical suffering. And death, of course. No one likes to die. We all attach to our beloved one. And just letting go what we have is already so difficult. If at the end of the day and you need to let go everything, that is very, very difficult, especially your beloved one, if your families, you have children, or to that, just want to let go, is very difficult. So birth, sickness, old age, and death is actually not a very comfortable situation, and it is suffering. And then, so these are physical suffering, and also in life, sometimes we got stuck with people who do not like. You sit on the train, a drunken person came in and sit beside you. Oh, that's like, that journey is so terrible, you can't get out. And you just feel like that journey is so long, right? Or sometimes you are being put into a team to do a team project, and you just can't work together with that team member, and that project is like one whole term. Well, I always tell the students, when it's at the uni, it's still okay, because you know it's just one term, you can get over with it. But if you go to work and you happen to have a colleague that you can't deal with very well, but then you always have to communicate with him or her. And it's so difficult to find a job, and you don't want to let go your job because the boss was not too bad. So you are in the situation that's very difficult. So that's why at uni, when if you have a team project, if you find that anyone is difficult to deal with, just feel it will go away very quickly. It's only like, if it's one term, now it's 10 weeks. So if you start to do a project in week 3, week 4, you only have 5 weeks to tolerate. That's okay. That's easy. And just also think about it. University is like a small scale society. The reason why they want to create so many of these team projects is because when you graduate, when you go to work in the future, this is what you're going to confront. Now giving you a small scale one, a short period one, so that you can try. That's actually good, right? So, to be with people that we dislike, that's suffering. But in life, sometimes it's just kind of void. No matter, just somehow, you like to be with people that you like, but then you just got stuck with people that you dislike. And to be separated with the beloved one is painful as well. You go to the airport, everyone hugging, crying. So that's very difficult. And so we have birth, sickness, old age, death, to be with people that we dislike, to be separated with people that we like, or to be separated from the beloved one. That's number six. And number seven is desire not fulfilled. That we have a lot of wishes. When our expectation cannot be fulfilled, it's very frustrating. So if you think about, like, sometimes we got very upset. Is there anyone here who got upset very easily? No? Everyone is very, you got upset very easily? Why? Did you ask yourself why?
Because you cannot get what you really want.
Okay, yeah. Time. So, a lot of time we get agitated very easily is because, like, for example, you wish to get something, even if you just go for shopping. Now, these days, people go for toilet paper. So, you go to the Woolworth and you find that there's not toilet paper, and you start to get very angry. And you start to swear that other people are very selfish. So, the reason why we are angry, or is a toilet paper make you angry? Is toilet paper make you angry? Toilet paper is non-living beings. How can a toilet paper make you angry? It's a non-living thing, right? So it's because we do have expectation. Today I want to go there, I want to buy how many of these? And go there, out of stock. So you get upset, you become upset. So it is because of our expectation is not fulfilled that we got upset. Right? So, and sometimes among friends, you find that you get agitated very easily as well. Maybe because people say something that you do not like to hear, or people's comments, you find that you do not like it, then you find that you got agitated very easily. Or sometimes, so if we are very rigid with our expectation, you find that, say for example, well, this was a kid. It was once that a kid wanted jelly. We ran out of jelly. We give him chocolate. Chocolate is good, right? Kids like chocolate. But he insists he wants jelly. He didn't even want to touch that chocolate. And keep crying for jelly. But that is a kid. But sometimes it happens to us as well. Like if you suddenly feel like you want to eat something, right? You want to go and buy something and you find that that's out of stock. And you need to buy the second thing which you don't think that you want to eat at that moment, and you don't feel that happy. So desire not fulfilled causes a lot of suffering. And in fact, when the Buddha attained enlightenment, as we say, sickness, old age and death are suffering. But in fact, this suffering developed also because of our expectation not fulfilled. Partly because of expectation not fulfilled. Because we all like to stay young and healthy all the time. And so therefore, when we start to age, we start to get upset because our mind is not ready to accept that we are aging. And so you find that a lot of people, when they are in a nursing home, they keep telling you a story that when they were young, they can do this, they can do that, and and they just hate the state that they are in. They are not living in the present. They live in the past. That will give you more suffering. But if you are more ready to accept the change, say, okay, I'm now 60, I need to do what a 60-year-old person should do. Be if same thing with some grandparents, right? If they are grandparents and they have their son and their daughter-in-law and they have their grandchildren, but if the grandparents did not realize that I'm now a grandparent, I'm not the father or the mom of the grandson, right? But if they try to interfere and try to take control of the grandchildren, right, like their mom and dad, then there will be a bit of sometimes making a bit difficult between the parents-in-law and or the son and the daughter-in-law. So they need to know the status that they're in. Now we're grandparents, what's the role of the grandparents? Share some experience, guide the son and the daughter-in-law to how to take care of their children, but leave it to them to do it themselves, right? You need to know your role. You don't just say, oh, they can't do it properly, and you jump in or interfere too much, then that will be it will create unnecessary problem. So a lot of time we're not living in the present. We tend to forget where we are. So if we are able to understand, so a person who are able to accept their age and try to live their life in the present, you find that they will be a bit more enjoyable, rather than keep thinking about what you can do in the past and didn't realize that now you're actually wiser than in the past because of the age. Although physically you may not be as strong as in the past, but your mind is actually wiser. You appreciate that. But if not, then we're going to have a lot of suffering. Same thing with sickness. Sickness come, oh, I hate this. Don't use the word hate too much. That will make you really full of hatred. All right? So learn to understand, oh, this is, I probably didn't wear enough clothing, I got cold, I need to be careful. All right? And now I need to keep myself warm, drink a bit more warm water, and just make sure that better rest and drink more water and get well soon. Then, rather than getting upset doesn't help. But a lot of time we do not want it. We want the sickness to go away quickly, and that's when your desire and the reality is not in line. That's where suffering comes. So a lot of suffering comes is because our expectation is like this, but the reality is like this. And so there's a pulling between our expectation and the reality. And that's why we get very, very upset. So desire not fulfilled is a kind of suffering. And why do we have all this suffering? Finally, the Buddha said it actually comes from because of our wrong understanding, our lack of understanding. So just now as we say, why do we feel aging is a kind of suffering? We do not like the state that we are in. We keep thinking about the past. Because we don't understand that everything is subject to change. That our physical body keep changing. We are not accepting that our body has changed. But change is a universal law. The Buddha did not create change. He just calmed his mind, focused his mind, and he actually, from the calmness and a mind that's focused, he realized how the pattern on how the universe works. Everything is subject to change. So everything is subject to change, but we tend to attach to the good state and don't want it to change. The problem is that it is impossible. So we are trying to go against the natural law and hope that the good state doesn't change. Always stay at 18 years old. That's impossible. So when it changes, we feel unhappy. When you have gray hair, you feel unhappy. It's because we don't understand that everything will change. But if you are more ready to accept the change, you'll be actually more relaxed. So because of not understanding impermanence, we start to fall into attachment. And same thing, so with external phenomena, we tend to attach. And with ourselves, we also didn't realize that this I that we cling on to is subject to change. And in fact, that we, like, why do we feel so upset when we fall sick, when we die? Because we don't want to fall sick, because we don't want to die, right? But what is this I? So the Buddha said, this I, it's all about this I. I do not like to be with this person. I like to be with this person. Oh, this person has to go away. I am sick. I will die. I feel scared. It's all about this I. See, all this suffering comes is because we love ourselves so much. We want to protect ourselves. We don't want ourselves to fall sick. We don't want ourselves to age. We don't want ourselves to die. We want our view to be accepted. We want ourselves to be with people that we like only. We want our wishes to be fulfilled. It's all about this I. But what is this I? So you can see that it is from this I that it develops into so many suffering. So what is this I? So the Buddha said this I is actually a combination of many factors. So if you look at ourselves, those of you who study science will probably know that this body is made up of a lot of cells. How many cells do you have? Any biology students here? Medical students here? No. Okay, billions and billions of cells. All right. Okay, so it makes up of cells. If you think about it, close your eyes, think about this body. Is it one piece of thing? It's not one piece of thing. If it's one piece of things, then we cannot have organ transplantation. We cannot have cosmetic surgery, things like that, right? Because it is made up of many causes and conditions, and that's why you can replace the spare parts. Right? So the Buddha said this body is actually made up from, first, the form, which is the physical part, and the physical part is actually made up by many factors as well. If you look at the physical, just physical part, from top to our toes, our hair, our eyes, our nose, our mouth, our ear, our tongue, our skin, and then your bone, your blood vessel, your nervous system, your heart, your stomach, your intestine, and your whole body. It's made up of so many things. And every moment it is moving. We breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. The air, every moment is different. If the air is the same, no more oxygen. Right? And you, whatever you eat, it goes through digestion. And it goes to the toilet. If it doesn't move, and you don't go to the toilet, you fall sick. Right? So it has to move. And the food that you eat, your intestine absorbs the nutrition, transform into energy. See? It can transform into energy and with different minerals, different vitamins for you. And so there's a lot of movement that's going on in ourselves. So there's a physical part. So physical part,
And then, so that's Ho Fong. And besides the physical part, we have sensation or feeling.
So besides the physical part, then we have the feeling of, we are able to have feelings of cold, warm, soft, hard, sharp, or smooth, right? So that's sensation, and then perception. Perception are just simple idea. Say, for example, when we know that okay, this is hot and this is nice, or this is valuable, or that thing that is a cheap thing, so whatever it is. So it's a basic concept that we have, and this basic perception can come from our upbringing, the education that we've gone through. We have a certain perception. Simple perception first, and then number four is mental formation. Mental formation will go into a bit more, all other thinking, we put it inside here. So this is the starting of the thinking, but in a more simple and straightforward, straightforward state. And then the other mental formation, oh, this is better, but I think I need to go and get it. Where do I get it? And I'm going to ask Peter where to get it, and things like that. So, and then you start to say, I need to give him a call, and you start to take action. So there's mental formation, and then finally, consciousness. So that's how this I, if you think about this body and mind that we have, that the whole day actively works together like an eye, is in fact made up of these five things. So this is the physical part. So this one is physical, and this part is the mental part. So this is mental factors, and this is the physical factors. So our I is actually formed by this, what we call five aggregates. So it's these five aggregates that actively works together that allow us to have the activities that we have every day. So we are actually not one single piece like this. It is actually made up of many, many causes and conditions, including the physical aspect and the mental aspect. And every moment there are actually changes that's going on. Right? So as for example the physical factor. We eat in some food, we pass out some food, right? And so there are factors that come in, there are factors that go out, and so that's why it is not a fixed entity. It is not a fixed entity. In fact, you cannot actually use a solid line, but maybe just draw the line, because when you eat a lot, then you can make it a bit bigger. Right? If you eat a bit less, then maybe you can shrink a little bit. Right? So that's why, because it is not permanent. Mm-hmm. It is not permanent, right? Because it is not permanent. It keeps changing, right? And it is also not independent, because it is not just by itself. It depends on many causes and conditions.
And lastly, it is not self-mastery. Is it the master of the self? If I is the master of itself, then we do not need to worry about the virus. We can just say, don't come to me, I do not like you. But why we are so worried? Because we are not self-mastery. Just simple things. We all like to be happy, right? So can you just tell yourself, I like to be happy, don't be feel sad. You can't even do that. So, that's why, because we don't have this characteristic, so in fact we are actually not a fixed I as what we thought. So the definition of I or self means that something that is permanent, that's fixed, that's self-mastery, and that's independent, do not need to rely on any causes and conditions. But because we actually do not have this characteristic, so in Buddhism, the Buddha used a negation method, that's negative. And that's why we say there's non-I or non-self or selfless. So the terminology of selflessness or non-self, they're all the same, basically means that we do not have this characteristic of self. It doesn't mean that this I disappears. It just basically say that this I is not a fixed entity. It does not have the characteristic of permanent, independent, and self-mastery. It is a combination of many causes and conditions. It's ever-changing. But because we do not understand this, we didn't penetrate the truth of this, so therefore we tend to attach to this ourself as an I and start to just box it up and start to develop self-centeredness. And with self-centeredness, think of an I, we start to protect ourselves. We become very defensive of ourselves. When we are very defensive of ourselves, then self-love, we love ourselves so much, self-arrogance develop, self-attachment develop, self-view develop. And that's why you can see, why do we have so much fighting with one another? That's my view. You are against my view. I do not like you to argue with me. And when someone is better than us, we feel jealous. And we are better than others, we feel arrogant. It's all about this I. So when this I become too strong, we tend to think about what we want only, we forget about others. So in order to have a better life, a more peaceful life, the most important thing is to reduce our self-centeredness. Learn to embrace others. Learn to understand that we are actually always in the process of changing. We're actually impermanent. And even this life that we have, although we are not enlightened as yet, but we are just using this life to develop better understanding of the truth, and hopefully we can develop the wisdom to become more at peace than it is. And we need to understand that although we are all not enlightened, but people around us support our life in one way or another. So ourself, rely on our love causes and conditions, and our life also rely on a lot of causes and conditions that support us. So thinking about, this I is not a fixed thing, but at the moment where we are ordinary, we still attach to ourselves, and in order to make use of our this life to benefit ourselves and others, develop wisdom to be at peace and at ease in the future, you find that our life actually rely on a lot of people's support. So we need to understand that other people like to be happy as well. So therefore, we need to remind ourselves to appreciate the kindness of others,
at the same time do not allow our selfishness to bring unhappiness to others. And it is by doing this we learn to be less self-centered, less selfish, then this I will not be that strong. You find that you'll be able to embrace others better, learn to share the feelings of others better, learn to be more considerate to others. Then you feel better. So, because as we say, yesterday I made an example. We say if on a hot day you ask your mom to go and buy Coca-Cola for you, and she went to, she loved you so much, she on a very hot day she went to the shopping center to buy Coca-Cola for you. But then she saw that, oh, Pepsi Cola is on special, half price. I buy Pepsi Cola. So she bought Pepsi Cola back. And you look at the Pepsi Cola because you were at home waiting for Coca-Cola. Then you start to get very angry. I told you to buy Coca-Cola, why do you buy Pepsi Cola? You know, sometimes we can become like this because you're expecting something, right? Say for example, we say sometimes, like the kid, we give him chocolate, but he don't want, I want jelly. I insist that I want jelly right now. So we can get very upset because it's Pepsi Cola, it's not Coca-Cola. You thought probably wouldn't happen to us, but sometimes it happens. Some people are very rigid in that I want to drink Sprite. Why do you buy Coca-Cola for me or whatever it is, right? And so, but if you can change your mind around and think, oh, mom is so caring, I just said that I want Coca-Cola, immediately she went to buy for me. And it's such a hot day, I should be very thankful, regardless of whether it's Pepsi Cola or Coca-Cola. I should be very thankful and say thank you to her and maybe ask her to come together and enjoy some afternoon tea, right? So if you change your mind and change to a mind of thanking and appreciation, you find that you feel better and your way of speaking and acting will be better as well. But if you are so egoistic, I say I want Coca-Cola, why did you bring in Pepsi Cola? And you start to be, some people say, you are wrong because I say Coca-Cola, why did you buy Pepsi Cola? Some people are very rational in a way that they try to logically argue who is right, who is wrong. But sometimes it's not necessary, isn't it? So this is just a very simple example. If our mind can be a bit more flexible and just adjust ourselves to the new causes and conditions, you can be happier. So that's why if we can be more appreciative, then life will be better. And if we can encourage everyone to be more appreciative to one another, then you find that our society will be happier as well. So when the Buddha attained enlightenment, he went to the deer park, he told them about suffering. Then he says, what causes suffering? So the Buddha, it was lucky that the Buddha went to them, explained all this suffering, but he didn't stop there. If he said, look, true, life is suffering, and stop. We just have to accept it. Then that's bad luck. That's very pessimistic. But luckily the Buddha did not stop there. He said, okay, do you agree that they are suffering? Do you agree that they are suffering now? Right, so then the Buddha said, do you know what causes suffering? So we have explained quite a lot. Do you know what causes suffering? Expectation. Okay.
Change.
Okay. So, because everything is subject to change, but so we can't say it's the change that makes us suffer. It's that we do not understand the change or we don't accept the change that causes suffering. Change is a natural law. So because of ignorance about impermanence, that although in theory we tend to know, but in reality a lot of times when things happen we just forget about it. So, because of ignorance about the truth of impermanence, ignorance about the truth of that everything arises due to causes and conditions, they are all subject to change, and so we wrongly attach to them and have certain expectation and are very rigid in our expectation, and that causes suffering. So the Buddha said the cause of suffering comes from our ignorance. So ignorance includes ignorance about the truth of impermanence, ignorance about that everything are actually selfless. They are actually a combination of causes and conditions. They are not fixed. So ignorance about this lead us to attachment, to cling on to it as fixed and unchangeable. And we want them to stay at the state that we like it to be. So because of ignorance, we start to have attachment, and that actually causes a lot of suffering. So then the Buddha said, can this be overcome? So the Buddha then say that he had practice and he managed to get rid of ignorance. He managed to realize the truth that everything is selfless, and he that everything is impermanent, and let go attachment, and that lead to the state of tranquility and peace, or nirvana in the state in Buddhism. So he said, if we can get rid of ignorance and attachment, then you will be tranquil and peaceful. And he has practiced and proved that that is possible. But how can we get to that? So then the Buddha has tried to share his method of practice, and his method of practice is called the Noble Eightfold Path. Alright, so first, when the Buddha teach, he talked about the Four Noble Truths, as we had said just then. So first is the truth. The suffering is the English words that we use, but in the Pali term it's called dukkha, because the dukkha is a wider connotation than just the physical suffering or mental suffering that we're talking about. It includes uncertainty, insecurity, impermanence. And second is the truth of causes of suffering. And then the truth of the end of suffering. And the truth of the path . So this is called the Four Noble Truths, and so the first two, truth of suffering, truth of causes of suffering. So causes of suffering come from our ignorance and attachment, or ignorance and desire. So if we keep engaging ourselves in ignorance, so ignorance in Buddhism refer to ignorance about the truth, all right? So ignorance and desire or attachment. Right, so if every day we engage with whatever our speech, actions and thoughts are always in ignorance and attachment, then we're going to lead ourselves to suffering. Right, so you find that this is the cause. So if we every day we engage in ignorance and desire in our speech, actions and thought, we're going to lead ourselves to suffering. That's cause and effect. But then if we realize that this ignorance and attachment just give us too much suffering and we really want to get away from it, then we need to try to practice, try to get rid of ignorance, try to reduce attachment. That's by walking on the path leading to end of suffering. So this, if we cultivate the causes of path leading to end of suffering, we lead ourselves to end of suffering.
So it is just basically twofold of cause and effect, whether you like to choose to go around this cycle or you want to go to this cycle. So the Buddha is just a teacher to us. He, through the calmness and focus of his mind, he realized the pattern on how the universe works. And he realized that everything is impermanent, it arises due to causes and conditions, and in the flow of impermanence, there's this law of cause and effect. So we as human beings, ordinary human beings, tends to get carried away by attachment, greed, hatred, ignorance, and then always cultivate wrong actions, speech, and thoughts that lead ourselves to suffering. Although we like to be happy, but we always engage in greed, hatred, ignorance that lead us to suffering. So he starts to change his mind, reduce ignorance, reduce greed, reduce hatred, reduce anger, jealousy, selfishness, and even let go attachment, and finally he lead himself to end suffering. So this is a path that everyone can walk on. The Buddha is a teacher who tries to tell us how we can practice. So this is called the Four Noble Truths, and you find that the Buddha's teaching all oriented around the Four Noble Truths. Sometimes they have the sutra, the whole book that talks about suffering. Sometimes they've got a whole book that explains about causes of suffering. And there, of course, there are a lot that talks about path leading to end of suffering. Different method of practice that can help to reduce greed, hatred, ignorance. All right? And a very common, the most common teaching that talks about how to end suffering, the path leading to end of suffering, that's, we call it the Noble Eightfold Path. Alright, so as we say, greed, hatred, ignorance causes suffering. And that's this is the understanding that we need to have, that everything can change. Although we are not perfect, but we can change to be better. So it's just work around the law of cause and effect in the flow of impermanence. So in the flow of impermanence, we supply with the right causes and conditions according to the law of cause and effect so that we move towards a good direction. That's how it works. So the Buddha did not create anything. He just figured out how the universe works and tried to supply the positive causes and conditions that can lead to ease. Alright? So, the Noble Eightfold Path, the first item is right understanding. So, right understanding means understand the teachings of the Four Noble Truths, understand the teachings of cause and effect, understand the teachings of impermanence and causes and conditions, understand that we can change as long as we try to cultivate the wholesome causes and conditions that can lead to peace and ease. So with that understanding, we also know that if we do not want to put in effort, then we'll just get ourselves into suffering. The Buddha didn't punish us, the Buddha can only teach us. And so with that understanding, we need to meet next. Right, next. Anyone can tell me? Right? It's all about right. Right view. Sometimes we call it right thoughts or right views. Right thoughts or right determination. So the second one is actually determination. So with the understanding, understand that we can change. We just need to work around the law of cause and effect. Through the truth of impermanence, then we need to set determination that we want to change. Right? As we say, we all know that to wake up early is good, or to play less game is good. You need to have determination. You say, from tomorrow onwards, I'm not going to play any games throughout the whole week. except on Sunday. Are you able to do that? So, and you know that it's for your own good, because the games is just for entertainment, right? So you say, and also playing too much games make our mind quite scattered. And when you are in the lecture hall, sometimes you just get out of your games, you're just not focusing, right? So you want to tell yourself no games except on Sunday, 1 hour. All right. So you said you have the understanding that playing too much games is not good. Then you set determination, that's how you want to do it. Okay? You need to determine. Then after that, you need to have?
Right speech.
Yeah. So we need to have the right speech, right action, so the conduct, right? Because if we have the understanding, yes, playing too much games is not good, and you set determination, but then say, I continue to do it. So you're not following your determination, then that means your determination is not strong enough. So the determination is important, then we need to have right speech. And what's next one?
Right action.
Action.
Yes.
Livelihood, yeah.
Effort,
yes.
Concentration.
Okay, so this is called the Noble Eightfold Path. Now, the Four Noble Truths is called Four Noble Truths because these are the four truths that a person needs to realize in order to attain the noble state. And same thing, the Noble Eightfold Path are the eight paths that a person needs to practice in order to attain to become a noble one. Okay? So right understanding is the most important, because it's right understanding that guides all this. So all this right means that they are actually guided by right understanding. That we understand greed, hatred, ignorance causes suffering. And so therefore, we need to try to make sure that we reduce greed, hatred, ignorance in ourselves throughout. So the determination is basically try to have a mind that's free from greed, hatred, ignorance. Try to always make sure don't allow greed, hatred, ignorance to disturb your mind that much. Speech, try to not to engage in speech that comes from our greed, hatred, or ignorance. So speech that comes from our greed will be probably lying, telling lies to get more for ourselves, right? Speech that comes from hatred, shouting at others, swearing. Speech that comes from ignorance, maybe we'll say something that is just meaningless, that is actually full of desire, that's not good. Or sometimes speech that comes from our greed or anger, or jealousy, then we may gossip behind others, backbite others, defame others. So those are speech that we should not engage in, but rather right speech will be speech that encouraging others, comforting others, praising others, gentle speech that makes people feel happy and positive. And action, right action, the same thing. Actions that comes from our greed, hatred, ignorance, we need to avoid. So action that come from our greed, stealing. Actions that come from our hatred, killing, hurting others, right? Action that come from our ignorance, silliness, then you start to do things without proper thinking, right? So. And right livelihood means right action, right work, right occupation. Because we know that if we engage in greed, hatred, ignorance, then we are not going to be happy. So we don't want to go to a work that keep doing wrong thing. On one hand, you know cause and effect. On the other hand, you go to
engage in a work that every day you have to tell lies, every day you have to harm others, you're not going to come back peacefully. Right? So that's why if you are working in a place where it is not in line, so in Buddhism we say right livelihood. Any occupation that bring harm to others, we need to avoid. So, but how to justify? Then we can use the five precepts as a guideline as well. Any precept, any occupation that goes against the five precepts are actually not the right occupation for a Buddhist. So for example, some occupation could be lawful in the society, but not necessary in Buddhism. For example, we have a lot of pubs in Australia, casino. So some of you may work as part-time bar attendant, helping people to pour wine. You think it's good? You say, I'm not drinking, I'm just earning money. It's not evil, but if you can avoid and look for some other job, that would be better. Right? Because indirectly, you are actually encouraged. Same thing with casino. If you go to casino and try to facilitate the kind of work, then you are actually teaching others to gamble. Right? So sometimes the people who may have struggled because you find that, oh, this is the good money from this job, and the other job's money is a bit little. I think I want this. But then if you understand cause and effect very well, then you feel that I'd rather have a peace of mind rather than have more money. Yeah, so that also reflects your confidence in the teacher, your confidence on the law of cause and effect. And so all of you, you're going to go to work in the future, and sometimes this is where your understanding will have to kick in. Okay? So in order to do all this right, you find that right effort has to come in. Right effort, the effort that we need to put in to make sure that the wrong speech, actions and thought that we already have, we need to stop it. If, for example, you're already angry, you start shouting at someone, you need to put in effort to say, no more shouting, stop, right? So that needs effort. Or sometimes we have strong sense of arrogance or jealousy. So we know that results out. And if you get better result than your friend, you find that it's very natural that you will start to say something like boosting yourself. Or if your result is not as good as your friend, maybe you will start to be very sarcastic. So if you know your character, your own personality, then you say, this is actually not good. I don't want to do this. Okay? So today, result is going to be out. I just want to be very mindful of my speech and my mind. If my friends did better than me, I'll just sincerely say congratulations. You know, you need to tell yourself first. So that needs effort. Before the unwholesome speech, actions and thought arising, we need to put in effort to stop it. Right? And also put in effort to cultivate more wholesome speech, actions and thought, and also for a wholesome speech, actions and thought that we already have, we want to put in more effort to cultivate it. Alright? So for example, you may have been learning the teachings of the Buddha, doing some meditation yourself, and now you say, I want to be a bit more diligent, I want to come to this Dhamma talk at least once a week, and also attend meditation and things as such. So it just push yourself a bit more and that effort as well. And so once we have this effort in our practice, we are mindful of the teaching, we are mindful on the right understanding, then your mind is actually mindful on the Buddha's teaching, and you're not that scattered, you're always mindful on what you're doing, whether it's right or wrong, then you find that with that mindfulness, when you want to practice concentration, it will be much easier. And it is with the concentration, when the mind is focused and calm, then the understanding that we have before, understand that greed, hatred, ignorance causes suffering, and because through this, through putting the teachings into in applying the teaching in our daily life, you find that there's a lot of struggle within ourselves, with our own habits and so on. But those are actually a very good experience for us. So when your mind is calm and focused, then you start to realize, oh yeah, desire actually is not necessary. Desire causes suffering. And when your mind is very calm and focused, and you even realize that, where is this I? I is just rising and falling. And if you let go, you start to realize what the Buddha realized. And that's how we transform the right understanding into real wisdom. And that's how we meet ourselves to end of suffering. Okay, so that's the Noble Eightfold Path, so this, the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path are very basic teachings of the Buddha. All right. So a lot of people tend to think that the Buddha practiced concentration to attain enlightenment. So concentration is very important, but the understanding before, the practice beforehand, are all very, very important. Because if we don't have the understanding that greed, hatred, ignorance causes suffering, and you just say, I want to practice meditation, I want to go and choose a tree that looks like Buddha tree, and then sit under that, and then probably I can attain enlightenment. You will never attain enlightenment. Because when you sit there, say, I want to attain enlightenment, am I getting there? This I is too strong. You may go astray. So the Buddha, the reason why the Buddha can attain enlightenment, not because of the Bodhi tree, but rather because of he was very observant. He observed how living creatures kill each other. He observed the suffering of people, why people go through sickness, old age and death, and so much suffering. And so therefore, he wanted to understand what causes this suffering. And so when he attained enlightenment, and because of the reflection, the observation, reflection, contemplation that he had before he practiced meditation, and that's why when his mind calm and focused, he had these questions that he wants to answer, and that's why he has been thinking, and that's why when the mind is calm and peaceful, it becomes clearer to him. Right? So the Buddha did not say that. So the Buddha said, when the Buddha attained enlightenment, he said, life is suffering. He did not say, now I can end both sickness and death. He just identified that the cause of suffering, the reason why we feel so much suffering when we have sickness, old age, and death, is because we attach to I. I don't want to die. I don't want to sick. I don't want to fall sick. I don't want to age. And we don't recognize impermanence. So he did not say that when he attained enlightenment, you will not die, you will not fall sick. He just basically tells us how to confront sickness, old age, and death with a peaceful mind. And finally be free from it. Because physical body is a worldly phenomena. It's subject to change. But what we need to do is to develop the wisdom to see the truth and be able to confront the changes with a peaceful mind and be free from it. Okay, right. Is there any question that anyone like to ask? No. Good. Thank you. So we stop here today.
Thank you.